Hey, Questers. I'm Roy Washington. The great outdoors, wildlife, trees, plants, fresh air, streams. It's a world of predators and prey, life and death. The outdoors hold so much beauty, but along with that, the outdoors holds many, many mysteries, legends of Wolfman and Sasquatch, Dogman. Are they just legends, or could there be some truth here? Today we speak with Mr. Dark Waters from New Orleans, Louisiana. His popular YouTube channel is filled with first-hand accounts of people who have experienced cryptids, people who have experienced near-death encounters with these legendary giants, Bigfoot and Dogman. Kick back and relax as we converse with Dark Waters and hear his own personal account. You already know, this is The Quest, and we got you locked in. watched it up here with Dark Waters from New Orleans, Louisiana. Am I correct?
Absolutely. How are you today, Roy? You doing good?
I'm doing fine. Can you tell me a little bit about where you were born and about your family coming up, about you and your upbringing?
I was born and raised here in New Orleans, Louisiana. My mother was a school teacher. My father was an insurance agent. And like many other kids here, I went to Catholic schools my whole life. Moved to out of New Orleans for a little while. I moved to Dallas, Texas for a while. And then I came back, and I've been living here ever since.
Okay. What got you interested in the paranormal? Was there a certain event that happened?
Well, to be honest with you, when you start talking about paranormal stuff and strange things happening, it really is a part of the culture of New Orleans. I say this all the time, and sometimes people don't get it, and I try my best to relate it to you here. Of course, as a kid, I had a couple of paranormal things happen, but just the city itself, it kind of breeds this paranormal energy, not in a negative sense, not in a spooky sense, because people get this thing where they're like, oh, I'm scared to go to New Orleans, but it's commonplace for someone here to talk about having some type of paranormal experience. For example, the house that I'm in now, I'm renting it, and there's a chair in the house, and the person who owns the property was her father's chair.
Okay.
And so when I first moved in, she said, you know, I come down here and I just sit here because it's peaceful, because I can feel my dad's presence here. And so I moved all my furniture in and everything in, and she asked that I leave this chair in the house.
Okay.
Well, I didn't have a problem with it. Hey, you want me to leave the chair? I said, the chair's cool. But she's told me stories about coming down here before I moved in, and the chair would be kind of rocking just a little bit, but no one was living here. Not rocking and swaying, and this is like an easy reclining chair. You know the kind of chairs where you pull a handle back and your legs go out, but it kind of rocks a bit?
Yeah.
And she would say, you know, every now and then I would come down here and that chair would be moving. But she wasn't freaked out by it. She wasn't scared of it. It wasn't like, oh my God, you know, there's a demon in the house. It's just that type of paranormal thing happens here in New Orleans. And when you start talking about a city with houses that are 200-300 years old, that's located on a ley line, that's had so many wars and different types of people coming, going throughout this city, and the history of the city of New Orleans, is just the perfect place for there to be this underlined paranormal activity. And not all of it is bad. Some of it is, but not all of it is bad. And I think that's one of the messages I haven't been able to relay to people about New Orleans. You know, people talk about hoodoo when they talk about voodoo, when they talk about vampires and all these things. You know, when we get together with some families around the Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner, these conversations just start happening where they tell you about this kid that was in the house that thought was their daughter, but it wasn't their daughter. And they tell you about seeing shadows out of the corner. It's a city where there is an abnormal amount of paranormal activity, but again, I don't think it's anything that should keep anybody from coming here.
Is New Orleans a city where hoodoo and voodoo, and I'd like to get a breakdown on the difference of that. Is that a city where a lot of that is prevalent?
Well, yeah, there's undertones of hoodoo and voodoo. So, essentially, you have to remember the history of New Orleans, right?
Okay.
New Orleans is a place that was instrumental in the slave trade. So, down in New Orleans, down in the first quarter, the Congo Square, that's where the slave ships came in and people were bought and sold. Well, hoodoo and voodoo, which are some of the old religions from Haiti and from Africa, all came over with the slaves. A lot of that stuff is still here.
Okay.
And just to be completely and totally honest with you, there's the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, which is located on St. Claude Avenue here, right on the outskirts of the French Quarter.
Okay.
Priestess Miriam is the voodoo priestess there. But then I know martial arts instructors, because I took martial arts. One martial arts instructor that I know is like one of the highest voodoo, I don't know what you call the name for a female, it's a priestess, but I don't know what the name is for a male.
Okay.
But he practices voodoo.
Right.
And then voodoo being the darker But again, when it boils down to be completely and totally honest with you, it boils down to your belief system and how much you actually believe these things can affect you.
Okay.
And if, for example, for a person who's a Christian and believes in Christ, then they can walk into a voodoo ceremony and walk straight out. Nothing won't bother them, right?
Right.
Because they've already, their mind is set on what their religious belief is. Now, if you open yourself up and you're susceptible to it, then the power of influence, it works on you. And I don't mean by the power of influence, meaning who someone's influencing you, but we have these doorways with that are within ourselves, these spiritual doorways. And if you open a door within yourself, then something may come in. But if your door is closed and your mind is set on what your spiritual beliefs are, then you'll be fine. And then my advice to people who decide they're going to dibble and dabble in those outside spiritual things is, you know, before you touch anything or deal with anything, educate yourself, you know?
Right.
People kind of play with the Ouija boards, right? The last story I did, I think right before I did this Bigfoot Bonanza, was about these guys who were playing with a Ouija board and ended up having an encounter with a very, very old, powerful spirit that's been around a long time. It's gone back to, like, people talked about this spirit in, like, the 1700s, called the Hat Man, which is a shadow spirit. Not even a shadow, but a ghost of the Hat Man, which is a very terrible entity. But they ran into it because they were playing with these Ouija boards.
Okay.
And in order for that board to work, one of them had to be open to, or psychically have some kind of psychic connection, or a seer or someone like that, but one of them was open and this entity was able to manifest itself. So as long as you don't go out seeking these things, you'll be fine. You know, you really will be fine. And if you happen to come across something negative, then that's when you reach out and you seek help to get rid of it.
Okay. Can you tell me about, you said you had a couple paranormal experiences when you were young?
Yeah, I'll tell you about one. When I was in high school, I think I was a senior in high school, I used to babysit every now and then. When I wasn't with my girlfriend, I would babysit for a family that knew my parents.
Okay.
And I think I told the story before, but they had two sons, the older son and younger son. The younger son absolutely loved me and adored me, and he and I would always play around, and we were at their house, their big, beautiful house in New Orleans East, and the younger son, the older son went to bed. The younger son was kind of feisty and scrappy, and you always had to chase him down and kind of pin him down to get him to do what you want him to do.
Okay.
Well, this particular night, it was about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and the older brother's gone to bed. He's like, I'm tired, I'm going to sleep. Well, I'm trying to get the younger brother to go to bed. I'm chasing him around the downstairs of the house, finally grab him, pick him up, run him up the steps, put him in bed. I say, hey, look, you're going to be getting too late. Close the door to the room. I come back downstairs, and I don't know if I watched MASH or Golden Girls. It was one or two. I really think it was Golden Girls because I love Golden Girls.
Yeah, I
the
love
TV
that
show.
Too.
And out of the corner of my eye, I see him run around the steps and back into the kitchen. And so I'm cursing and screaming, like, boy, if you don't get your behind in it, I'm not going to say the word I was saying, but if you don't get your behind in the bed, I'm going to give you a spanking. So I go around here into the kitchen, and it's a U-shaped kitchen where there's only one way in. No other way out. It's a U-shape. On the left-hand side is the refrigerator. There's a countertop. That's a U. In the center of the bottom of the U is a window, and there's cabinets that go all the way around. On the right-hand side is kind of a bar. Not a bar area, but you know how you can sit, and there's a little opening where you can sit out and look out.
Yes.
Someone can sit at a little counter and eat.
Yes.
And I go into that kitchen, and he's not there. And I'm freaking out. I'm like, yo, I know I just saw him run in the kitchen, man. I knew I just saw him go in his kitchen. And so I go up the steps, and I'm kind of hustling up the steps because I'm trying to see what's going on. I get in the room. Not only is he in the bed, he's not in bed with his brother. His brother's arm is on him, and his leg is on him. And he's kind of swishing his little brother. You know how brothers sleep in the bed where one brother kind of bullies the other one?
Yeah.
So it could have never been him. It could have been him out of the bed, but I knew what I saw.
Okay.
Later on, I found out that that's called a doppelganger. And I've talked to many people who had the exact same experience, and it's all over the city. Some energy manifests itself and it impersonates a loved one.
Oh.
And it's crazy. That's one of my paranormal experiences I've had.
Wow, it's crazy. Really enjoyed your interview on Darkness Radio with Dave Schrader, and also were you ever on Coast to Coast? I know I heard you on Darkness Radio.
Coast to Coast. Yeah. I did 4 hours on Coast to Coast with Dave Schrader, mm-hmm. which was historic. I didn't know it when I was doing it because I didn't realize that nobody else from YouTube had ever been on Coast to Coast. Then I didn't know that no one who ever didn't have like a book or a TV show or a radio show was ever on Coast to Coast for 4 hours. Right. And on top of that, the majority of the times they do a Coast to Coast show, it's like four guests over those 4 hours. And my publicist, who kind of helped me out with getting to Dave Schrader, she told me, she said, hey, you know, you did a wonderful job. She's like, you talked for 4 hours straight and entertained the entire world for 4 hours telling your stories. She's like, if you go back and listen to the interview, Dave didn't really talk much. She's like, you told stories for 4 hours straight. And I still, to be honest, just still haven't sat down and listened to the interview. I rarely listen to my interviews.
Okay.
I don't know why. I just have a thing where I don't. I just feel like what's out there is what's out there. What I put out there, it's all natural. It all flows. I don't really, like, prepare for interviews because I love just to hold the conversation. As long as it's a conversation between two men or a man and a woman, I think it's going to be perfectly fine and it's going to be great because I am who I am every day. I'm not, like, a personality or anybody special. If you caught me 5 hours from now downtown at the cigar shop smoking a cigar, having a glass of wine, I would be talking the same way I'm talking to you right now. You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's just, that's just me as a person.
Yeah, so I have archives of his, my favorite shows from him. I've been listening to him for maybe about 4 years now. And of course, that show that you were, that you did is a part of that archive. Can you give us the difference between voodoo and hoodoo?
Okay, great. Voodoo is, people tend to think voodoo is a darker art or magic, but voodoo pretty much is when you're going out and you're looking for some form of favor, whether it be for love, whether it be for money, or whether it be for influence. People go out and they ask for these priestesses to do spells.
Okay.
In order to bring them something. Hoodoo, on the other hand, is more of a darker type thing that is used to spread influence on people in a manner which could be, which people would deem as negative.
Okay.
So one of them is a lighter art, one of them is a more negative, darker art. And if you run into someone who says they practice either one, I would still tell you steer clear of them.
Okay.
Because unless you really want, you're seeking that type of help. One of the things that people need to know is when you deal with either one of those, whatever you put out, you get back three times fold. So if you put out something negative, then expect something negative three times fold to come back to you. In either one of them, put out something positive and something positive three times fold to come back to you. Each of them have their own gods that they're different gods that they worship. And it's just a very old art. You know, I don't claim to be an expert on any of them because I don't particularly plan to go use any of them at all. But that's what I knew. That's the limit of my knowledge on it.
Okay. The story that really blows my mind that's from your personal experience is your encounter with the dog men. Can you share that with us?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So my encounter with the dog men was, it stems back. This all started about, I'd say, almost 5-6 months ago.
Okay. Oh, was that fresh?
I was at a local cigar shop, and this is when I was really first starting my channel. And so I was seeking stories out to tell. And I have a friend of mine who's an ex-DEA agent. He was one of the longest running undercover DEA agents. He has the record for being undercover the longest in the Drug Enforcement Agency. So he's sitting at a table telling me his stories and telling me what happened and how things went. And, you know, he's telling me these multiple stories about them kicking at doors, you know, all this exciting stuff that I just thought was riveting. But none of it was really paranormal, but I thought it was really riveting stuff. And across from us is this guy who's smoking a cigar, and he says, I have a story for you. Are you willing to pay for it? And I'm like, nah, you know, I'm not willing to pay for it, but I'll buy you a cigar, and you can tell me, you know, what happened to you, right?
Okay.
So he proceeds to go on and tell me about his encounter that he had in New Orleans East. And that was when I first heard about this creature, right?
Right.
But to this point, you know, I had not even heard of it. And I didn't even know that it was here, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So that was the first time I heard about the dog man locally. So he goes through in detail and tells me about his story where he's out in New Orleans. He's on a levee and he's fishing, and he ends up getting trapped with this thing on one side of a train, and he's on the other side of the train racing to get to his car with the train between him and his creature.
Wow.
From there, yeah, I mean, it's really a good story. But from there, I started digging into the topic, and I started reaching out to people in my network. I ended up talking to a guy named Skip outside of Oxford, Mississippi. And Skip tells me his story about his encounter with the dog man in outside of Taylor.
Okay.
So my encounter starts when I go to visit Skip. He and I go and we talk, and he's just kind of bringing me around the area where his encounter happened. It's kind of like a tour.
Okay.
And we're just talking about dog man. Well, as I'm on this tour and we're riding around, he's like stopping and showing me properties where people had problems and people had issues, and people are still having issues to this day. Well, we finally get to the spot where his encounter was, and it started turning dark. And he and I are there. We're both outside of his truck. His truck's on a bulk on the side of the road. He has his driver's side door open, and it's the essentially the truck is facing to where, how can I describe it? If the driver's side door is open to the street, the passenger side is on the side by the trees, right?
Right.
And we're standing in the middle of the road ahead of his truck. You know, the lights are on. It's just starting to turn dark. And I'm from the city, so I don't really know much about the woods, but it gets a lot darker out there at night. I mean, it gets dark quick in the woods, something that I just wasn't aware of. I mean, I just didn't realize how fast it turned dark. You know, and the city is kind of like, oh, okay, but the trees being around tend to block the sunlight, so the sun goes down relatively fast,
right,
and then the trees block the remaining light. When we're out there talking, he starts to get skittish and nervous. And he's like, man, we should really go. And I'm like, look, I'm trying to get this story completely pulled out of him, get everything out of him that I can, all the emotions and everything, kind of like an investigative journalist would do.
Right.
And I'm trying to pull every little drop of information I can pull out of him, which was my mistake, because at that point in time, I really didn't believe in it. I didn't believe that it existed. I didn't believe that it was, because I had never seen it. I didn't believe that this was possible.
Okay.
So we're talking. He starts working his way back to the truck, and as he starts working his way back to the truck, we hear these noises, and it sounds like, the best way to describe it, it sounds like six refrigerator Perrys are running through the woods at the same time. I mean, like, it's insane.
Right.
And you can hear tree limbs breaking, you can hear, like, stuff just moving, like, these huge things are running through the woods. And he goes and he gets in the driver's side of the car. I mean, like, literally, he's got one leg in, one leg out. I work my way around to the passenger side of the car, but I don't get in the truck. I mean, it's a truck, it's not a car, we're calling a car, but I open the door to the truck and lean the door against my butt to where I'm kind of standing there and I'm looking, but I'm not necessarily in.
Right.
My legs aren't in. But I'm looking. Like, my head is to the side. I'm looking around to see what's going on. And the sound just gets louder and louder and louder to the point to where it sounds like bulldozers coming through the woods. And he pulls off. I mean, I'm talking about when he pulls off, bro, I mean, he's gone. And I'm left standing there.
Wow.
Like, literally standing there. And it's dark. It's not like the sun is still up and you feel safe. It's dark. And so I'm left on the side of the road opposite whatever these creatures are that are over there in the woods. Now, there's not much that I hear. But I knew something's there because I heard it run to that point and stop.
Okay.
And there's no animal that I know. And again, I'm not from the woods, and I preface everything with saying, you know, I'm not from the woods, so I don't know everything about being in the woods. But there's no animal that I know that makes that kind of noise coming through the woods. And the noise was at a high level, like the tree breaks and the branches breaking. It weren't like they were breaking at the ground. Like, I knew what it sounds like when someone runs through the woods. I played in the woods as a kid.
Right.
In New Orleans, and I knew what it sounds like when somebody's running through the woods. But also, I'm not crazy, and I know what it sounds like when something is breaking tree branches on top of a tree, right?
Yes, sir.
So, I end up standing there, man, and I'm, like, just by myself, freaking out. And I don't really know what to do, man. Yet. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you're all by yourself and you're scared.
Yes.
But at some point, your senses kick in and they're heightened to a point to where it almost is like everything in your body is working perfectly. Like,
right.
My eyesight was perfect, and I wear glasses. My eyesight was working as perfect as it possibly can. My hearing was working as perfect as it possibly could. Like, every little thing that I was able to pick up. And the strange thing was, as once those things came, like, it seemed like the woods around us went quiet, but there were these little bitty sounds that I could still pick up, like small rustling from behind me. It was like maybe insects or bugs or something moving around in the grass. It wasn't anything big, or maybe a rat or anything, but it wasn't big. It wasn't anything big moving, but it got to the point to where the only thing I could think to do was to raise my fist to fight. Like, cause I was like, I don't have no weapon. I don't have no knife. I don't have nothing. Completely unprepared for the situation because I didn't even expect it to exist.
Right.
So I wasn't prepared for it. And just as I'm raising my fist and kind of squaring my feet up to deal with whatever was going to come out, I hear him slamming on the brakes. And it's like this, the loudest sound ever. It's like this skidding sound that you hear. It's like,
okay.
And then I hear his engine revving coming back. And he comes revving around this curve that was just about maybe, you know, 100 to 200 yards away, maybe 100 yards away, this curve. And he comes revving around that curve. And he pulls up right in front of me and says, hey, get in the car. His driver's side door right in front of me. And after a little bit of trouble, I hop in the back of the truck and we pull off. And then we exchange words about how I felt about him leaving me, which, you know, I won't repeat what I told him. But he did look me in my eye as a man and say, hey, I didn't do that on purpose. I thought you were in a truck. You know, he had tears in his eyes. That's how scared he was.
Wow.
He said, I would have never left you. And so, you know, I got over that. I was happy to be alive. I was happy that nothing happened to me. And Skip and I have gone on to be good friends. But that was my introduction to this creature that they call Dog Man. Now, to ask, people always ask me, did I see anything? And I can only tell them what I did see was, and it's the honest to God truth, I didn't see a snout, I didn't see any teeth, I didn't see any eyes. All I did was, when his headlights were coming back towards me,
uh-huh.
across the room from me, there were these trees, and I did see something large, 6-7 feet tall, move from one tree to the next tree. And it was fast, but it was black, and it was huge. And it moved from one tree to the next tree.
Oh.
But I didn't see, like, they didn't step out and growl at me and be like, I'm going to eat you.
Right.
But something was there. And I have talked to Bigfoot guys who say, well, man, that was a Bigfoot. And this and that. Well, I know for a fact there are no Bigfoots in that area because they've been run out by these creatures. And all it could have been was a dog man. So since then, you know, I touched on many dog man stories. And I pivoted away from dog man quickly because what I found is that, and I still haven't been able to figure this out. I haven't been able to figure out why people are so fanatical about this particular cryptid. But I pivoted away from it because I found that some of the people was crazy fanatics behind this.
Okay.
I've had conversations with people who just told like the most outlandish lies to me. And my process of doing a story is either I know the person firsthand or secondhand through somebody, I get an introduction to them and I sit down with them, I interview them, or someone contacts me and they want to tell me their story. If they're within the southeastern part of the United States where it's close enough for me to get to, when I have time, I'll take a road trip to go meet them. But if there's someone who's further away, what I do is I have multiple phone conversations with them. When I mean multiple, I mean like 7, 8, 9 conversations with them. And then I hear the story 10 to 15 times during these conversations. And I hear their wife in the background or their kids in the background. Or, you know, you pick up on these little bitty things, these nuances in a conversation that lets you know if it's true or not.
Okay.
But sometimes I get people who want to tell me a story, but the only reason why they're telling me the story is to get attention. And then other people tell me a story to get my attention and then start bashing someone else who told me a story. So I've gotten these crazies when it's associated with Dog Man. And then there's an inherent risk with dealing with topics like that.
Okay.
Which, again, has turned me off to it, you know.
Right.
When you start talking about, and I'm not worried about the creature itself, but I tell people to imagine this. You go out. People want to find these creatures and figure out what they are. I tell them all the time, I say, first of all, you know, you have to be smarter than that. We live in a country, strongest country in the world right now.
Right.
America's an empire. It really is an empire. You know, the greatest empire in the history of the world. Barring them, since we don't know what happened to Atlantis, it sunk under the sea, we don't know what happened to it. But since Atlantis, this is the greatest empire in the world, right? And so at the end of the day, we don't have a clue. At the end of the day, People act like they don't have a clue, and they don't understand that our government has drones flying overhead,
right,
and monitoring the public. And if our government has that kind of technology to the point to where everyone has a cell phone in their hand, which is a mini spy device, if they have that kind of technology, what makes you think they don't know that this creature exists, right?
Right.
And what makes you think they're not monitoring these creatures? Common sense tells us these things, right?
Right.
So if common sense tells me our government has the ability to monitor everything we do, they have flying machines that record everything that goes on, the common sense tells me they know about this particular creature. We know for a fact they know about Bigfoot, so why wouldn't they know about this? And so I tell people, I say, hey, if you just so happen to go out and find this and you survive and then you get evidence, who do you think is going to come and pay you a visit over your evidence? The government.
Yes, right.
Right? That makes sense.
Right.
So what's the purpose of you running out risking your life trying to find evidence on something that 90% of the people, 90% of the public will think you crazy anyway, right?
Right.
Because they're too busy dealing with paying bills, paying car notes, getting kids back and forth to school, putting food on the table, so they don't even think about it.
Right.
The little percent, which is probably we didn't give it 1%, I give it 0.25% of the population who does believe in it, most of them not going to believe you because they're going to think you're crazy unless they have evidence of a body or DNA evidence. Well, you go through all this trouble, you survive getting out there with a dogman, they don't eat you, you get the DNA evidence, now you get back, and guess what? Good old Uncle Sam has his people come to get it from him. So to me, when we look at it, and I'm a chess player, and I love playing chess, so I think moves and moves. And hey, when you look at the concept of dogman, is it real? Yes, I can tell anybody who's listening that this creature is real. Does it make sense for somebody to go pursue it? No, because it's a losing proposition. It really is. You know, it's a losing proposition. And I've strayed away from it because people tend to try and force me to blur the lines between entertainment and reality.
Right.
And what I do is entertainment, and I'm a great entertainer. And I tell people all the time, when you start crossing over into the world of reality, then you add all the complicated things, all the complications into it. You add all these other factors into what's going on that most people don't anticipate and they don't see. Well, I know they're there. So I've taken a break from Dogman because simply and purely, when people try and force me to blur that line where it puts me in jeopardy, so they can sit behind their computers and make smart little comments, then, hey, that's going to end right there because I'm the one taking the risk. You're just the one behind your computer typing, you know?
That's it. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, we have a lot of dog man sightings up, like, toward the north part of our state here in Wisconsin. But I've never encountered that, never really been in the woods up there. But, you know, hopefully I don't ever encounter anything like that. I don't know how I'd react. You must have been real terrifying right there, having, you know, nothing between you and whatever it was in those trees, probably looking out at you. And thank God that guy came back for you.
It took everything from my bladder not to open up, bro. I promise you. I don't know how it didn't, but it took everything for it not to open up. I mean, it really did. It was primal fear, and that's why I tell people, you know,
right.
I grew up in New Orleans. I've seen people pull guns. I've seen people get shot. I've seen every little thing that you could see in a major inner city. I've seen those things, and I've been in some hairy situations, but the fear I felt there was different than anything I've ever felt. You know, growing up in a city like this, you kind of get a feel for when something bad is going to happen, right? It's
right.
Like this sixth sense you get for when some drama's about to happen. You can be at a party or at somewhere, and you just know that the air in the room changes, and you're like, oh, I got to go. It's time for me to get out of here, right?
Right.
It's just that sense you get growing up in an urban area. That doesn't mean no good out there because it's not the same thing.
Right.
So I don't have the senses for that. Just like someone who's out in the woods all the time has those senses, they've developed those senses. I don't have those for those environments.
Right.
And so I had no way of detecting it outside of all the noise coming my way, which common sense kicked in and said, well, something big is running towards it.
Okay.
And then when you get past that, the level of fear is just insane. I mean, it really, really is insane. It really is insane. So, you know, Dogman's a good topic. It's popular. I mean, I can tell you this. You know, if you want a lot of YouTube views, do something on Dogman. but for me, it's not always about the views. I'm about creating good quality entertainment. And good quality entertainment that doesn't have the ultimate price tag associated with it.
Okay.
So, on some prices, I'm not willing to pay to entertain people.
Right. You know, you was talking about how sometimes you just get that feeling that something bad is happening. When I was the summer before my senior year in high school, I had my first job, and I remember I had to go over by my buddy's house, and we was gonna ride in together, but it was very early in the morning, and I'm walking over there to his house, and as I get to the corner, I see something coming down the sidewalk, but it's almost like a block away. But something told me, it's like, man, I think you might not want to be here when that comes. Cause I had to go that way that this thing was coming. So I go across the street, and you know that street is full of big trees. I got behind a big tree, and after a few minutes, it got down on the end of the block where I was at, and. To this day, I really think I seen a witch. I really think so. And a witch, and I didn't know what it was at the time, but I think I seen a witch in a hellhound. This woman, it was probably the scariest woman I've ever seen in my life, except for one other woman that I've seen that used to come to our church that just scared the hell out of me. But this woman was in all...
She went to church, huh?
Oh, it was a woman that used to come to our church that just... scared the hell out of me, man. And I think she used to be demon possessed. She used to come maybe she'd come a couple times, and you would see her for 6 months. Then she'd come back, and just scary. But I get back to her in a minute. But this is what I seen that morning. This woman was in all black with the hat, and just real creepy looking. And it looked like she glided along. It looked like she wasn't even walking, like she was gliding. And she had this big chain. And this dog, this dog was very tall on all fours, like a Great Dane, but it was real big and muscular, almost like a lion. And it looked like in his mouth, like the mouth was glowing red, and the eyes was glowing red. And I was terrified, and I got behind that tree, and they went on past. They were on the other side of the street. They went on past, and then they turned down and went down the other side, you know what I'm saying? And once they got kind of far off, I had maybe like 2 blocks to get to my guy's house, and I just jetted, took off running, and made it to his house. But I'll never forget that I seen. It was really crazy.
Wow.
That was a crazy...
That's insane. I'll tell you this.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have these God-given gifts that I think part of the technology that we have nowadays and the advancement that we've made. And to be honest with you, I believe the reason why we've been given these technologies is to kill a lot of our other gifts that we've been given.
Okay.
Because it dulls our senses and it dulls our imagination. It dulls everything about us. Sidebar, that's why I don't use video, like, imagery in my videos. Like, you know, video imagery. I just tell the story.
Right.
And dramatize the stories because our minds are so powerful that our minds can paint pictures for us. And I leave that, I say that to spin back and say this. You know, we know, inherently we know good and evil.
Right.
We do. Our bodies know. Our minds know. Our subconscious know the difference between good and evil. We know when we're around in the presence of someone good and when we're in the presence of someone evil. We know it. We sense it. We feel it. The problem is our senses, and we've been dumbed down so much to where we don't listen to those voices that are inside of us. We really, really don't. When I was 14 years old, or maybe 15 years old, there's a lakefront down here in New Orleans, and it's just this maybe 10-mile long area, maybe 15-mile long area where you can just drive up and down as along the lake. Well, there is a spot that kind of, for as long as it was blocked off, and it protruded out, and there was like the entire lakefront. Normally you can see houses and there's things you can see, but there's a spot that kind of protruded out.
Right.
And then it went back in, and it went back into the neighborhoods. Well, for the longest, they had closed that spot down. And I was in high school, and a couple of friends of mine was like, look, I got my pops called, man, we're going to go out there and we're going to hang out.
Okay.
Well, we go out to the lakefront, we're hanging out, we got a couple of girls with us. And me and this one girl, we went up on a levee, and we're sitting in the dog talk, and, you know, doing what teenagers do. And we're kind of trying to hang out. And so we start getting this bad feeling that there's someone or something on the other side of the levee. I mean, just this horrible feeling, like, and we both have our backs turned to it.
Okay.
But I just had this feeling that something or someone is coming up behind me, and whatever it is not good. So I tell her, I say, hey, let's go ahead and let's go back down and catch up with everybody else, because we're probably about 75 yards away from everybody else. There's no lights out here. It's pretty much pitch black. Down where the car was, you know, they had the car doors open and you could see the car lights and they had the music playing, but we're far enough away, so I just didn't feel comfortable when something was there.
Okay.
So we start heading back. And the whole time we're walking back, she's like, you know, you tripping, we'll be fine, you know, let's just hang out. And I'm like, no, something's not right. I'm telling you, something's not right. So when we get back down to the car, it really wasn't a car, it was a van. It was this brown van.
Okay.
Everybody's there talking, laughing, playing music, and I just happen to look back towards that spot, and you can see this silhouette of a person standing on top of the levee, but it was big. It wasn't like a normal size person. It was big. I was like, man, what is this?
Okay.
It was this huge person, not big enough to be like, oh, some ghost, you know, I would say like the size of a regular college football player. Whoever he was huge.
Right.
And he was just standing there looking at her. And so I tapped on her shoulder. I said, look back over there. You see that? She was like, who is that man? I said, I told you something bad was going on.
Okay.
I said, I told you something was bad. And that person stood there and watched us to the point to where he stood there so long watching us that I told everybody that was out there. And one of my friends, Terrence, she was like, man, we gonna go check him and see what's up. I said, no, what we gonna do is we're about to get in his van and we're about to go.
Right.
And so we got in the van and we left. But that's just another example of you having a sense of something's wrong or something's going on wrong. And if you ignore it, sometimes you find yourself in danger. So it was a good thing that you crossed the street. Whether it was or whether it wasn't a witch or a hellhound, whatever it was, it's not like you didn't need to be anywhere near it.
Right.
And it's a good thing that you crossed the street. Now, I believe what you're saying because I've talked to enough people. I know how a person's voice changes when they're telling the truth as opposed to when they're telling a lie. It's very easy to tell when someone's telling you the truth over the phone because there's this, unless they're trained to like talk in interviews and kind of stay calm, there's no way you can hide those emotions. There's a certain amount of stuttering, there's a certain amount of everything that happens.
Right.
There's no way you can hide those emotions. So there's nothing that you can do, you know?
Yeah, that was a crazy experience. I might as well go tell you about the number one woman that scared me. The one I just kind of told you about, the one used to come to our church. I mean, she was, her complexion was so black that it seemed like her eyes glowed. I mean, she just was a scary looking woman. And, you know, she, like I said, she would come, you know, to church maybe a couple Sundays. Then you would see her for 4 or 5 months or whatever. Then she'd come back, and that's kind of how she did. But she would always just jump up in the middle of service. And I've heard people speak in tongues and everything, and I don't know if that was really tongues, but she just would just go off on this rant, just in this language or whatever she would be saying, and just interrupting service all the time. And but the day that really got me, she had a daughter, and this girl, you could tell this daughter was special needs, and she maybe brought her once before this particular Sunday. And this particular Sunday she brought her, they sat up in the front row. So when the preacher got up and started preaching, you know, they began a tongue kiss, French kiss. For probably like 40 to 45 seconds, man. I mean, and it seemed like the pastor kept on going, but it seemed like everybody else just stopped. I'm sitting there with my dad, he's a trustee. We're probably 3 rows back, so a couple rows behind them. And I'm just looking at my pops and the deacons and everybody just looking and just staring, and they just going at it, you know. And so I mean, I don't think that's anything.
Oh man, that's not normal, man.
No, it's not. And like I said, that's.
And they stood up in church and did this.
No, they were just sitting on the front row, and then while they were sitting down, they just turned to each other. They just start making out. And it was crazy. And so like every time when she would come to church, I mean, I just kind of snuggle up under my dad a little. I was a little guy, you know, a young kid. I just, you know, my dad is my protector. I just, you know, when she came, I just really kind of got a little closer to my dad in service, you know, because she just scared the hell out of me. And so.
Oh yeah, that was scary. Who does that?
Right, right.
Somebody does that. Nobody does that. That's nobody does that. I mean, like, yeah, nobody does that, bro. So that's just wrong, and that's just nobody. You know, two regular people don't kiss in church. Also, you know, oh man, that's terrible. That just messed me up with that one. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What are you gonna say?
Now, I'm just saying, yeah, I was finished with that one. That she just scared me, though. And I just all, I think I've even seen her in my nightmares before. She was a scary looking woman, and then those antics just always just frightened, you know. And even to the day, I'm grown, I would never forget, you know, her. You know what I'm saying? So that was crazy. What are your thoughts on black eyed kids? You have any good black eyed kid stories?
Well, you know, I got a lot of black eyed kid stories. I don't have a clue what they are.
Right.
To be honest with you, I have a research team that I work with. One of them is a Wiccan, and she's probably one of the most knowledgeable people on the paranormal that. In the world of the paranormal that I've ever spoken to, and I've spoken to a lot of authors, and they can't hold a stick to her, but she doesn't care to be in the limelight. She just kind of helps educate me on things when I have problems and don't understand it.
Okay.
And even she doesn't know what it is. There's thoughts that they are demon-possessed people. There's thoughts that they are aliens.
Okay.
There's thoughts that they're just misplaced souls. There are also people who believe that they are omen. And they come to give you a sign of something negative that's supposed to happen.
Right.
But they don't actually, or they're not harbingers of negativity themselves. I couldn't tell you what they are. I think to me, out of all the things I talk to people about, they are the freakiest thing and the most perverse, because children are supposed to be innocent and kind and loving and, you know, a child all the way up until maybe 12 or 13 before they start going through that transition to adulthood, which used to happen a lot longer, a lot earlier than it does now. That's why we have men who stay at home with their moms at 30 years old, because they never go through any kind of rituals of growth to know they're becoming a man. But
right.
I digress and say that, you know, a 12-year-old boy or a 12-year-old little girl coming to your doorstep, it tugs at your heart because you always want to help a kid. But for them to open their eyes and have these black eyes is just... it's an abomination to me,
right.
And it's something that I believe is plays on the humanity that's in each and every one of us, you know?
Okay.
There's very few things that, very few people will go walk past a child that's hurt, you know?
Right.
And I just think it plays on our humanity. In that essence, in that sense, I believe it's something that's evil, because anything that's going to play on your... on humanity, on your humor, on your nature, your motherly or fatherly instincts. And there's people who have that instinct who don't even have children. It's just an instinct that we're born with to protect children. Men are born with the instinct to protect women and children. And women are definitely born with that instinct. It's an instinct that we have, regardless of whether we have children or not. So it's something that's universal all over the planet. This is something that a universal human instinct and a linchpin in humanity. And it's like, it's an assault on that linchpin. And it's just like, is that the word about linchpin? It's an assault on it to me. And, I don't like it. That's one of the things I hate. I really do.
Yeah, and it seemed like just about every story I heard pertaining to black-eyed kids, except for one, they always seem to have to get your permission to come inside the house or whatever, you know. And it's always a couple of them, and then I mean, it's all bad, I guess, if you let them in. But I heard one.
Yeah, it's...
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Like I said, there was one story I heard from you where I always wanted to ask you about it. When you was talking about the woman, and was she in New Orleans with a girl? She went to close the door, and the girl put her foot in the door and came on in.
No, that's not what happened. That's in Nashville, Tennessee. And what happened was she was moving around our house that day, and she had anticipated a maintenance man coming into the house. And you know how you're at your house, you're going back and forth, you're washing clothes, you're washing this, and you expect someone to come to your house, right? You're expecting a friend or somebody that you trust to come to the door.
Okay.
And the doorbell rings and there's a knock at the door. You open the door while you're passing by, and you, because you know it's somebody you know, or somebody you're expecting, you say, hey, come on in, but you didn't pay attention to who's at the door. Because you're assuming that it's that person. Well, that's what happened. She didn't put a foot in the door.
Okay.
She opened the door and said, hey, come on in, and went on about her business. Mm. And as she got about 6 paces away from the door, she got this eerie feeling, turned around, it's this little girl with a Gap shirt and some blue jeans on, and looks like a normal little girl. And she goes over to speak to the little girl and says, hey, are you okay, dog? You need something? The girl looks up and she got these black eyes. Mm. And so at this point in time, she's freaking out and backing away from the door. And then she, as she thinks, I need to close this door, the girl steps in and closes the door behind her. And that's how that black eyed kid got into her house. She invited her in. She didn't.
Right.
She invited her in. She said, hey, come on in. And that lady's name is Miss Patton. She's had a whole bunch of problems since then. But she's moved out of that neighborhood, moved into another area. Actually, they moved to a house next door to a church. And she attends church all day long. Like, she literally goes to church all day long.
Wow.
Like, she goes to, you know how the black community, there's church all day. There's early morning worship service. There's lunch service. There's dinner service.
Yeah.
There's Bible study. You know how it is. That's what she does now.
Choir meeting, usher meeting, all kind of meetings.
Mm-hmm. They got every meeting on the planet.
Right.
And they take a donation to every last one of them. So, that's what's going on with Miss Patton. She's fine. I've spoken to her again. Since the last time I talked to her about the interview, I've spoken to her just to check on her. And she's good. She's not having any more activity from this girl, but she's still, her body's still trying to get better. And she's still trying, her body's still trying to get back. Like her diabetes was off. She had necrosis of the foot where her toe was starting to rot away.
Whoa.
And all these things are slowly going back to normal now that she's away from that area. And when I talk about she moved away, this is Nashville. She moved from a very influential neighborhood in Nashville. I'm sorry, I got a phone call coming in. She moved from a very influential area in Nashville to the hood in Nashville.
Wow.
Where she had some family and friends that had ended up, like, extended family and friends, not direct family friends, but extended family and friends that knew her. And so now she's there, and she's like, look, I feel way more comfortable. I'm going to church every day. And she's getting better, which is a good thing. She really is. Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio wanted to talk to her, and I reached out to her. She's like, I'll talk to your friend Dave whenever. And I was like, all right, well, I'm sure you get with Dave to get them two on the line so he can talk with her.
Okay. From being from New Orleans, were you there for Hurricane Katrina?
Well, I evacuated for Hurricane Katrina. I had to come back to help a friend get his mother out of the French Quarters. She worked at Hotel Dauphine in the French Quarter. So I was here for some of Katrina. The immediate flooding of the city, no, I wasn't here. I was in Shreveport. But about 4 days afterwards, I ended up having to come back to help him get his mother, and that was traumatic, man. The things that happened here in New Orleans after Katrina are things that that were kind of glossed over in the media. It was kind of like, oh, it was exciting. It was, oh, help the refugees, which I, to this day, I don't watch CNN, I don't watch Fox, I don't watch any of those TV stations because they were calling United States citizens refugees, which they were citizens.
Right, that's
and
not
it wasn't
right.
Just people trying to make it out to be a racial thing. They were calling everybody that was from New Orleans a refugee.
Right.
And we were all of us are tax-paying citizens, blacks, whites, Latinos, the Cubans that are here, the Italians that are here, the Irish, everybody was trapped here together.
Okay.
And that was one of the things that I didn't like. But because the news media needs to sensationalize things and make it something exciting, they do these things, and it's just downright disgusting. But a lot of the things that happened were glossed over. A lot of the paranormal stuff that happened was completely ignored. A lot of the killings that happened were completely swept under the rug. It was just a terrible time for the city. And as I sit here on my porch now, you know, talking to you, you wouldn't, unless you went to the lower ninth ward,
okay,
you could not really tell that it happened.
Wow.
But if you go to the epicenter of where it happened, you could tell. I mean, it still looks like it in that area. There's still houses that are vacant. There's still lots that are vacant. There's still construction going on the streets in those areas. But outside of that, you couldn't tell right now that it happened. It's been 10, 12 years, 11 years. And I'm proud of my city. It came roaring back. Right. There were some resilient, beautiful people.
Right.
And I think we showed the world what Americans are capable of.
Okay.
What Americans can do.
Could you share some of the things you've seen when you came back to the city? You say you came back 4 days later?
Oh, yeah, I can share some of the things. Some of them are gruesome and gross, but one of the things that I kind of talked about and they cut me off on, I think it was Darkness Radio, Coast to Coast, because I think it got too gruesome, was just the sheer amount of death that was here when I came back.
Okay.
Because keep it in mind, and if you imagine this, the city's still underwater. The French Quarters, which is one of the higher points in the city, is underwater, but not water to the point to where you can't get around in it. You're talking about 3 to 4 feet of water.
Wow.
But you can still move around and walk around, right? So it's 2 spots in some areas, 3 spots, 4 spots, 4 feet in some area, but everything else is 12, 13 feet of water, right?
Right.
So you have to launch a boat and ride on this boat all the way from outside, pretty much outside of Baton Rouge into here, which is outside of La Place, which is, I would say, give or take, 20 miles.
Wow.
Into the city.
Okay.
Yeah. So you launch on a boat, head on in, you hit dry land. You get another boat that's hitched to a truck that's financed by the government. That one drives as far as it can drive on land again. You hit back into the water, hit another dry area, and then boom, finally you're to the city of New Orleans. You launch the boat, you're into the water. And the minute you start getting into the city, there are dead bodies floating. There are people on houses that are asking for help.
Mm.
There's all kind of crazy stuff going on. And one of the things that really traumatized me was, you know, as you're moving through this soup, and people don't understand, this wasn't water. This was this nasty soup of oil and human feces and chemicals there, household chemicals like bleach.
Right.
And dishwashing detergent, and every little thing that floated in mud, and it was every little thing, motor oil and gasoline. It was everything that you could possibly imagine. And the stench and the smell was horrible. But you get to these points to where you hit a body, and that body's on it because of the way bodies react to being submerged in water.
Mm-hmm.
They're bloated, and the word I'm looking for is they're pliable. So you hit a body on the front of the boat, and it literally curves around in front of the boat, and it's wrapped on in front of the boat, so you have to move it in order to keep going.
Oh.
And so I have gloves on and all these other things, but to reach down and pull a person, a human being's body, and pull them by the leg, try and pull them, and all the bone just comes off the flesh.
Oh.
And that's how nasty it was, because it was terrible, right?
Right.
To the point to where we got to the point to where when we saw a body, you would just poke it, and it would float underwater, and then it would sink underwater, you can go about your business, but then there's this horrible smell that comes out of the body. So, needless to say, we go through all this traumatic stuff when we get down to the quarters. When we get to the hotel, there are military contractors at that hotel, and we have a conversation with them, trying to get her out. Luckily, two of the people who were with me were her police officers, and one of them was a retired military contractor. So he knew some of the people, and we were able to get his mother out of the hotel and escort her back. But the thing that she saw when she was there traumatized her. And I just saw this woman, was it yesterday we went swimming or the day before yesterday?
Okay.
It was Friday, because Friday was the day I dropped the Bigfoot video. I saw her Friday about 12 o'clock, went in the swimming pool, and she was just saying, I remember when you guys came to get me, you guys are so brave, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, it wasn't brave, but, you know, it's what you do for people with friends and family.
Right.
And just Katrina itself, bro, is something that you will never, I hope no one ever goes through. I really do. I hope no one ever has to experience something like that. I know there was Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast, and that was horrible. And I think they had some water damage, and they had power outages, but I don't think they were submerged the way we were. And I just don't wish that on any other city in America. Now, it's just horrible, man. It really is horrible.
Were there dangers in the water, like crocs or anything?
There was snakes in the water.
Yeah.
But the most dangerous thing were people.
Okay.
That, and, you know, people talk about the paranormal stuff that happened after Hurricane Katrina. I can tell people about paranormal stuff, but the real drama that happened during Katrina wasn't paranormal. It was the people.
Right.
It was people in an Armageddon situation doing insane, crazy things to other people. Like some of the stories, I think I did 10 Hurricane Katrina horror stories.
Yeah,
I have 40 of them.
Okay.
But I stopped at 10 because when I started recording the second 10 and I got into the Superdome and the things that were happening in the Superdome, I couldn't do it anymore. I'm like, I was in the middle of recording a story about these old people who were on the floor of the Superdome, and they were out of their oxygen tanks, they were out of their medicines, they were out of their diabetes medicine, and people were dying, literally dying, and sitting in wheelchairs dying, right?
Right.
And as I started doing those stories, I couldn't do them anymore. I just stopped. I still have those recordings where I stopped mid of the recording. That's what I'm not doing. And I had so many people say, hey, man, you should do the story, you should do the story. And again, it's certain things that it's entertainment, right? And
right.
So at some point in time, again, there's a price that you pay for doing this. And if that price that, if I'm anticipating, right, and I'm supposed to pay the price for that, then I'm not, at certain prices, I'm not willing to pay to entertain somebody. So, you know, so I just, some of those things, I just leave them alone. And that was one of the stories that I left alone because I'm just not willing to pay that kind of price for it.
All right.
All right. Some
of, what's some of your, I know you like to smoke cigars. No, I know I like the tobacco pipes and everything. Where some of the places we might catch you, like on a weekend or something, or your favorite cigar spots in the city?
Oh, my favorite cigar place is, and it's the only one cigar place I go to, is called Cigar Factory of New Orleans.
Okay.
And that's the spot where I was telling you about my friend that owns it, and he's a ex-DEA agent. That is my spot. I don't, outside of there, I don't go anywhere else. Like, literally, that's where I go to smoke my cigars, hang out, relax. And hang out and talk with people and chill. But that's about it, man. And I've been smoking cigars since I was like 20, 22, I'm 39.
Wow, okay.
I've been smoking a while.
All right.
I've been smoking a while.
You got puffing on one now, huh?
No, it just went down to the nub, man. It really did. It just went down to the nub, and after I cook dinner for the boys, I'm going to probably head on up and get me another one. And I'll sit out here on the porch and do some more phone calls with people and talk. Now, what I would like to do is I do want to do two things with you. I want to invite you to read some of the stories. But also, what would be really nice if you actually told your own story,
okay.
Especially the one about the witch and the hellhound,
yeah.
And just let me bring it to life. Because, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about the creative process or how I do that, but I really got to go because I got to cook for these boys and they're sitting there looking at me like they're crazy.
Okay.
But you know how you just told me that story?
Yes.
And some people gonna steal this and try and do what I think, but it's fine. You know, you can't beat the original. But you know how you told me a story?
Yeah.
In my mind, when you tell me a story, I hear the story.
Okay.
So what I heard was, you say it was early in the morning.
Yes.
So I heard the sounds of early in the morning, right? I heard the sounds of being with a wood line close to you early in the morning. I know what that sounds like.
Right.
Then I heard the fear in your voice when you said, man, and I had this feeling I needed to get away from whatever it was.
Right.
And then you say, I crossed the street and hid behind a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So what I hear is a person walking. I hear the sound, I hear a dramatic musical effect where it lets you feel that fear. And then I hear someone standing in the bushes, the sound of someone's footsteps in the bushes, along with the same sound of someone walking down the street. And so when people tell me stories, I hear the story like someone would see a movie.
Okay.
And it just, I don't know how that happens, I don't know how my mind works that way, I don't know why it works that way, but that's how I hear it. But I would love to do that particular story once I come out of this Bigfoot bonanza, because it's actually a pretty good story. It really, really is. And people think that in order for a story to be scary or frightening, something really has to go wrong.
Right.
Right. On 99% of the stuff, or 95% of the stories that I talk to people about, they make it out of it alive. But which the issue is, people think that there's, let me go back and say it this way, it's a better way to articulate it. Stories are not about the dog man or the Bigfoot or the witch or the hellhound or the black eye kid. That's not what the story is about.
Right.
The story is about the person who encountered that strange entity or strange being. If you don't focus on a person, you don't know who the person is, you don't focus on the emotions of the person, then you will never have a great story.
Right.
It's the human emotions that we relate to. You can't relate to a dog man because you're not a dog man.
Right.
And I can't relate to a Bigfoot because I'm not a Bigfoot. I can relate to you because I go to church, or I used to go to church all the time. And I've been in church, and I've seen how people act in church when they catch the Holy Ghost and they jump around.
Right.
I've seen them run around the whole church in circles, right?
Right?
I can relate to that. That's what we relate to each other as human beings. And that's what makes my content so beautiful. Because I try and capture the essence of the person, not the essence of the witch or the dog man or the hellhound. There is no way that I can ever capture the essence of that. I just can't, because it exists on a plane that I don't exist in. It exists in a reality that I can't walk in. I can't walk with dog men through the woods and be like, hey, where y'all going? They'd be like, yeah, we're going to eat this dude over here for lunch. I can't do that, right?
Right.
So the only thing you did, and this is the truth, man. So the only thing you can do is you can capture the essence of what goes on with that person.
Right.
A guy, Ron, I talked to today. Ron is a funny character. I mean, probably one of the funniest guys I've ever talked to.
Okay.
Biker. I think he's in upstate Washington. He used to be a Hell's Angel. He's on the phone cursing and screaming and howling, talking about his Sasquatch encounter. And talk about how he's coming down the mountain breaking sticks, and he's freaking out, and he's throwing all his hot dogs at him. But I know Ron's telling the truth because I can hear it in his voice.
Right.
And most people say, well, man, you know, he could be a liar. No. Based on the personality that this man has, everything he said is consistent with his personality.
Right.
And he's like, man, I'm freaking out, so I'm throwing my hot dogs at him. I'm like, look, take the food and leave me alone.
Right.
But then they stay there. And so it's one of those things where if I focus on Ron, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But Bigfoot is not entertaining, bro.
Right.
I mean, nobody knows what Bigfoot is. They don't. You know, people think they know, but nobody knows. Bigfoot can't talk. And if he could, and we can interview him, he might be entertaining. But that's not what's entertaining. It's the person.
Right.
It really is.
There you go. So, yeah, I would love to do that, brother. Keep in contact with you. We can end this interview by just me asking you your favorite type of music and maybe the last song you listened to today.
My favorite, that's a tough question, so I'll give you three of my favorite songs. How about that?
Okay.
Robert Johnson, Crossroads.
Okay.
Frank Sinatra's The Way You Look Tonight. Is that The Way You Look Tonight? Yeah, The Way You Look Tonight.
Okay.
And I would say Sting's Moon Over Bourbon Street. Those are three songs that I consistently play. Like tonight when I smoke my cigar and I sit here on the porch and I have a glass of wine, that's what I'm going to listen to. It'll start off with Robert Johnson. It'll either go to Sting or Frank Sinatra. And actually, I have on my YouTube channel, there's a music playlist that I don't know if people even check that out, but I actually have a playlist of the music that I listen to. And I really play that playlist. And it's full of Frank Sinatra, it's full of Sting, it's full of Robert Johnson, B.B. King, Nina Simone.
Wow, some good music.
Oh, yeah, man. It's all great, 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 great music. And then there's a little bit of New Orleans brass band music on there. So, and the music that a person chooses is something that gives you an insight to their soul. That's why I think that's a profound question that you ask, the type of music that you listen to, because what you listen to is a part of you, you know?
Right. I'm going to have to go in there and check your playlist out. But hey,
I'm telling you, you'll enjoy it, bro.
Okay. Well, Dark Waters, man, thank you very much, man. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I had a lot of fun talking to you tonight.
I enjoyed it myself, man. And you have my number, bro. So if you just want to pick up the phone and call me, trust me, I'll answer.
All right. Yeah, and I will be getting back with you as far as the readings and doing something for your channel, man. And thank you again. And have a blessed night, brother.
All right. You have a great night.
We'd like to thank Dark Waters for speaking with us. So, what do you think? What do you really, really think? Is there something to the legends? Is there something in the woods out in the Pacific Northwest, upper Wisconsin? You know, is there something to the Patterson film? Are these legends real? Check out Dark Waters channel. Listen to some of those true accounts, those first-hand accounts. And you be the judge. For me, I'm a believer. And with that being said, whew, let me get the heck out of here. Get out of these woods for real. Hey, thanks to everyone who listens and who supports this podcast. On behalf of me, Roy Washington, DJ Dre Dilla, the whole Quest family, thank you very, very much. And I'm out.
What was that? We'll be right back.
Spare.